The ancient Socratic philosophy involved, therefore, the correction of particulars by the renovation of generals. Affirming all particulars to have their origin in generals, it is evident that man as a particular is founded upon man as a general, and hence that which influences the general must necessarily influence the particular. The reverse, however, is not essentially true, for the lesser cannot dominate the greater but must be dominated thereby. Philosophy, accordingly, is peculiarly adapted to the fields of generals, while science has an affinity for the field of particulars. Hence science is founded in philosophy and must receive its particular truths by adaptation from general verities. Philosophy, consequently, is not individualistic in the commonly accepted sense, but regards individuals as dependencies of universals, and seeks to achieve the liberation of individuals by the reconstruction of universals. Descending to the level of man himself, we must then regard man as a general, his parts, members, and attributes as particulars suspended from his general, or rational, nature. Man is not simply a personality, he is a personality, an individuality, and a universality in one. His universality verges toward universals, his individuality verges toward individuals, and his personality verges toward personals. Each of these natures in turn has its own dependencies which verge toward it and toward which it also apparently verges. From the subject matter of the previous chapter it is evident that generals partake of unity or wholeness, and particulars of diversity, for as diversity is contained within unity, so the particulars are contained within Demigods and Supermen 267. The general impulses which impel the consciousness toward particulars consequently incline it toward diversity and illusion, while impulses which impel the consciousness toward generals incline it toward wholeness or reality. How, then, shall man stimulate his inferior nature to verge toward its own superior part and thus accomplish philosophic growth? The answer is evident, by permeating the consciousness with the realization of wholeness, or by the instinctive inductive process of reasoning toward generals. Personalities are particulars, principles are generals. Hence to reason toward particulars is to reason toward personalities. Personalities are infinite diversity, and the contemplation of them is a philosophic error whose reward is an involvement therein which jeopardizes rationality. By inclining toward generals, however, we approach principles, and in the sphere of principles we approach wholeness, for a principle is a wholeness which may manifest as a diversity in application, but which in its own nature is an essential unity. Involution is consequently the inclination of the rational soul toward diversity, particulars. Its nature is corporeality, where dissimilars manifest as an infinite diversity of forms. Evolution, conversely, is an ascent to principle, in which the rational soul verges toward the principle of wholeness, thereby uniting itself with natures of ever-increasing permanence and lucidity. It follows that growth inspires the contemplation of wholes or unities, and that contemplation of wholes inspires, in turn, growth. Thus a benevolent circle is created which gradually accomplishes the unification of parts and elevates the abiding genius, the rational spirit, to the contemplation of abiding monads, or wholes. From the standpoint of pure philosophy, it is useless to affirm wholeness or deny diversity or platitudinize concerning either. The realization must flow downward from the apex of the individual self, where it has become established as the object of the rapturous contemplation of the rational soul. By verging toward the realization of wholeness, the rational soul is drawn out of the quagmire of generation, regain. 268 Lectures on Ancient Philosophy. Demigods and Supermen. 269. Ing thereby the control of certain functions and members ren. Dared impotent by the embrace of generation. As particulars depend from generals, so all natures exist. Suspended from principles, and before the mind is capable of rational functioning, it must be established upon the foundation of familiarity with principles. It follows that intellect founded upon principle cannot deviate from that which its own rationality has approved. Consequently, minds founded in principles are certain to function in harmony with the flow of principles. And the inevitable result of intellect functioning in harmony with such a flow is reasonableness of conclusion. In the last analysis, that which is reasonable is true if the reason itself he established in principle, for no part can deviate from the wholeness from which it is suspended, and principle is always sufficiently inclusive to circumscribe exception. In simple words, then, the establishment of the mind in wholes, unities, is essential to right thinking, and is the master ey to the rational cognizance of the order and sequence of parts, the monads of particulars. The haphazardness of modern philosophic speculation is due to ignoring the necessity of founding intellection in wholes or unities. A mind which does not reason from generals to particulars is always in danger of elevating a particular to the dignity of a general, thus creating an exclusive rather than an inclusive general. In other words, when the emphasis upon a part causes this part to appear as a wholeness to the perceptions of a specialized intellect, the result is a wholeness which is not inclusive in that parts do not contain each other. If a part, therefore, be raised to the dignity of a wholeness, then another part may also be similarly elevated, the result being an infinite diversity of wholes, which is a philosophic absurdity in that the element of diversity cannot exist in wholeness. When a part is so raised above the level of its own dignity, we find a system of thought which seeks to reduce universal to the estate of parts, to interpret the whole in terms of the fraction, to explain the whole by the laws of the part, or to invest the whole with the limited attributes of the part. All this results in the concept of an all which is not all inclusive, and which consequently finds it necessary either to manipulate universal laws so that they conform to the imperfect attributes of the part itself, or to ignore those phases of universal activity whose manifestations are beyond the province of the part. For example, to the ancient philosopher, science was a part of the body of knowledge. It was therefore a dependency of reason and an instrument of erudition. By the modern scientist, however, science is elevated to the dignity of wholeness, and regarded as the actual monad of rationality, rather than a dependency thereof. The resultant confusion is foreshadowed. The field of phenomena includes a multitude of activities outside the province of science as a particular. These are naturally excluded from science when it is regarded as a general. Hence, scientific men are prone to ridicule the concept of the immortality of the soul, because such concepts do not come under the jurisdiction of science as a particular. And when science is thus elevated to the false dignity of an absolute state, the doctrine of the soul is necessarily outlawed from universals. The inadequacy of science is thus demonstrated, for it is indisputably established as a particular and not a general. There is a natural tendency of the mind to elevate its own particular to the estate of a general. This is the inevitable outcome of founding knowledge upon particulars. The philosophic perspective is lost, and short-sightedness ensues. From short sight. Etness itself as a monadic entity, are suspended such particulars as bigotry, intolerance, and rational injustice. In America today we have a deluge of cults, literally Hun. Dreads of minor creeds, orthodox as well as heterodox, which have sprung up from an overemphasis of the Baconian doctrine of particulars. Analytical reasoning is largely responsible for this unfortunate condition, for analysis is a separative impulse whose natural trend is to break up similars into dissimilars and thereby unduly emphasize them. On the other hand, synthesis is an unceasing impulse toward the establishment of wholes or unities. This does not necessarily imply that the 270 lectures on ancient philosophy behind the procedure is at fault, for the microscope, while ever revealing particulars, at the same time reveals also the unity of those particulars. If parts be invariably regarded as wholes, and each new division be likewise invested with the sense of wholeness, then the present analytical process, through the reformation of its theory, would automatically become a synthetic process. In religion, this practice of elevating parts to the dignity of wholes is most common. Every little motion is thus raised to the dignity of a divine edict, every little whim rooted in a spiritual certainty, and every infinitesimal belief so highly magnified that it eclipses the entire body of universal order. If every individual nail in the rim of a wheel should conceive itself to be the hub, imagine the dilemma of the wheel at finding itself expected to revolve upon a score of different hubs simultaneously and make definite progress. The mind naturally thinks in terms of particulars, it is consequently incapable of ascending to that sphere of rational ity where dwells the spirit of intellectual justice. Justice docs not necessarily result from a full comprehension of wholes, but rather from the realization of the equality of parts. Thus in philosophy there is a democracy of parts and an autocracy of wholes, for parts are equal to parts but inferior to wholes. St. Paul epitomizes the philosophy of the master builder concerning this subject, for we know in part, and we prophesy in part. But when that which is perfect is come, then that which is in part shall be done away. Icor 13, 9-10, in this case that which is perfect signifies the state of wholeness. These words have been interpreted by the Christian Church to signify the ultimate unification of all men under its own banner, unmindful of the obvious fact that it is but a part itself and can endure only until that which is perfect is come. The elevation of isolated fragments to a position of supreme AC over wholes is the sequel to the overemphasis of individualism, for individualism, while it properly emphasizes the wholeness innate within parts, fails to emphasize the greater wholeness that is the sum of parts. The natural supremacy of